Hello and welcome to the LGBT Family and Games Community Podcast. My name is James, and today I am joined by Hella, and we have a special guest, Edward Misty.
Hello.
Who just made an amazing joke right before.
Oh my god, please, recording. Please edit that out.
Yeah, we will.
Leave the laughter in, though.
I'll see myself out now. Have a good night, guys.
No, that was amazing.
You're not allowed to leave now.
That was perfect. So Edward is a published author and artist, actor, producer, songwriter, and singer.
Yeah, all the things. All the things. Yeah, I do it. I do everything. I'm Dolly Levi. What do you need?
We've brought him on. Has an amazing book, Cancer, Musical Theater, and Other Chronic Illnesses. I gave it a speed read. It was actually very funny, and we'd like for Edward to just tell us a brief synopsis of your story. And
yeah, first of all, thank you for reading it at all. I've done dozens of these, and I think I can count on two fingers how many people have actually read it. So thank you for that. That to the good work of that you're doing. So thank you, because it's very difficult to explain my book to people who haven't read it.
I normally don't read in the nonfiction realm, and I'm sure I was having a hard time figuring out if you labeled it as nonfiction or fiction because of some exaggerations maybe here and there, but
I'm calling it fantasy nonfiction.
Okay.
Because it kind sense. Of it straddles a line, right? So all of the stories are true. They're not really embellished other than the kind of like nuance of whatever musical you're living in that moment. If you saw the movie Musical of Chicago, like it's where like you're in reality and all of a sudden there's like a spotlight and everything changes. And I really wrote the book in that mind's eye of that. So it is nonfiction, but I've been calling it like fantasy nonfiction just because
I did want to clarify that, because it didn't seem completely out of the realm of possibility, everything that was going on. But then I could see that maybe there were some artistic licenses taken here and there.
Yeah, just like musicals, it's heightened. Like everything is very like on a different level when it's on a different level. And when it's not, it's very like, this is what's going on. And I did that on purpose because of the life that I want this book to have beyond the book.
I have to say, and I'm so sorry for interrupting, but
no, please.
I was surprised when I read this. I thought, and I'll admit, I cheat when I read books these days. I don't have a lot of time, so I had Alexa read it to me.
I'm glad Alexa enjoyed it.
Yeah. No, but it was a great book, and I was actually really surprised because I thought, I was like, okay, this is potentially going to be, like, really depressing.
Yeah.
And I feel like you did a really good job of taking a story in a period in your life that had a lot of trauma, right, and hardship, and making it more of a comedy and empowerment and, you know, making light of it almost.
Yeah, that's what I do. I have a dark sense of humor, and I'm all about having, like, claiming agency over yourself, whatever the conversation is. I think a lot of us tend to lose our own agency along the way somehow for whatever reason. And especially in the queer community, I feel like we feel like we're spiraling out of control and we don't have a whole lot of grasp over what our lives can look like. And so I will be the first person to dig my heels in and be like, no, this is how this is going to go. And really just gain as much control over my circumstances as I can. And especially in this particular circumstance of being a full-time patient throughout the book and then throughout that period of time, you don't have control. And so it was just those little moments where I got to dig my heels in and say, no, this is what's happening.
Yeah. Well, and you even commented on the state of healthcare, which I thought was so appropriate with everything that you were going through. I don't even know how many rounds of chemo and radiation that you ended up having to go through. And then the transplant at the end just being that last ditch effort.
Like, all the things. Yeah. I mean, and what's sad is I commented on the healthcare system back then, and honestly, not much has changed. If not, it's gotten worse. So I couldn't even imagine going through this again now because, Lord, it was an uphill battle just with that alone. Never mind the actual medical procedures or experience of having cancer in the first place. The medical side of it was just like, what is happening? And it's so wild.
It reminds me of that saying that doctors practice medicine. Yeah. Don't necessarily know medicine.
And that's something that I have to remind others that I speak to and myself sometimes too. It's the practice of medicine. No one has perfected medicine. You know, it's not called the perfect of medicine. It's the practice. And so inherently, due to that terminology, every time you go into a doctor's office with something that's a big old question mark, you immediately turn into a lab rat. And thankfully, because of bedside manner and hospital protocols and whatever have you, you're not often made to feel that way until you are. And that is when I put my foot down, because they were pushing for something that I did not feel was in my best interest based on what they had told me and what I was understanding. And it just didn't make sense that they wanted me to go down this certain prognosis route. And so that's like in the get out and stay out chapter where it's no, I'm going, we're done. And well, I went and got a second opinion because it was scary. And what's really scary about it too, and I do like to keep these things lighthearted. So we'll start out with the scary shit and then we'll move on. You go into this circumstance like already scared, and then the hospital doesn't really tell you what's going on, and you just have to do it. And like you're listening to these people around you because you anticipate that they're experts, they're doctors. Like, why would you not listen to them? It's like one of the largest hospitals in New York City. Like, why would you not listen to them? Until it's just like, you know, and on top of that, like chemo brain, I did 4 rounds of chemo, 1 round of radiation. Chemo brain is like wet brain when you're an alcoholic. Like it does go away, but it takes a minute. And so by the time like my chemo brain or whatever dissipated throughout radiation, that's when I was like, hang on a second. Thinking clearly, I have a good, like straight down the barrel of what this is. Hang on, we need to have a conversation. And then that's when it became, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, I can't even begin to imagine. You have the authority figure of a physician that you're saying no to, but good for you for saying no.
I mean, in control of that. You know, not to tie it in too tightly to what's going on in the world now, up until recently, I think, maybe I'm naive to say this, politicians and leaders of communities, we've looked to them thinking they're trustworthy, they know what they're doing, that's why they're there. And so we're all just free falling at the behest of these people that we've somehow put in office for whatever reason. And it doesn't feel safe in that circumstance or the one that we're speaking of. It just doesn't feel like it's not promising. It's not promising. It doesn't feel good.
And those are things that we are like, our goal here is to explore some of the things that are like hot buttons, because so much that we like, we trust leaders in, even in the LGBT community, but there's sometimes when we can take things way too far and get like real mean towards each other. It's really odd. But yeah, especially political leadership, everything has become so polarized that everybody's just at each other's throats. So
yeah,
well, I can't wait for us to get back to normalcy.
If.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, it's just very much, am I leaving the country? Am I going to go move somewhere else for safety?
Yeah.
What's happening?
Funny you mention that. I live in Florida.
Oh, so does my little sister. Good Lord.
So, if you know anything about what's going on in Florida...
I sure do.
Like, I'm normally, like, against guns, but I've told my husband, like, maybe we should get one.
Oh, I have been thinking about it. I've been thinking about it, but I don't feel good about the idea of having a weapon in my home. Mm-hmm. Like, I have kitchen knives. That's as far as I'm going. I'll get you with the butter knife. Like, it's West Elm and it's rose gold. You'll look fantastic going down.
Wow.
But yeah, no, it is jarring. Like, it's that distrust of the authority figure. And you brought up earlier about the teacher that outed me. It's a thing that I think the queer community experiences through our whole lives, this like betrayal of the authority figure. In whatever fashion that may be, whether that's an assault or distrust or being put into a medical situation where the person in charge doesn't trust you. It's not in the book, but after the fact, I don't remember, honestly. But I had a regular doctor at the hospital. Everything was in one place. I didn't want to find a GP anywhere else. And she, anytime I came in to talk about sexual health or get my screenings done or anything else, like immediately clammed up and could not talk about it. And it was never like, no, I don't want to talk about it. It was just like, okay, yep, no problem. We can do that. That's absolutely fine. I'll be right back. And so I petitioned to get a new doctor because I was like, I need to be around someone who's okay talking about anal. That's just not like a thing that should not be talked about when it comes to like gay men's health.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you shouldn't have to recoil when I say that. Like it's just.
Yeah. No, unfortunately, that's something that we have to consider. I actually, whenever I do go to see a physician, I try to look up like LGBT friendly physicians online.
Yeah.
Like years ago, I had to go for something and I made sure that I looked up a doctor that was going to be okay with somebody being gay in the office because it's, you don't know.
I got lucky with mine. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you research or did it just like, was there a referral?
It was my parents' doctor.
Oh, that's nice.
Which I was kind of shocked about, but he's been very like upfront and he's like, if I don't know something, I'll look it up.
Great.
Like he's told me, like, I haven't heard much about this medicine, but I'll look it up before I prescribe it to you.
Which is like literally their job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But like he's very upfront and honest, which is relaxing.
Refreshing.
Refreshing.
Yeah. Some judge, which is, it seems really odd in that particular field. I've always found it odd that there are a lot of doctors out there that have like very religious backgrounds and they, more conservative religious backgrounds.
Yeah. I can understand that in a way though. Practicing medicine, yes, that's science and that's like hard facts and this is where it is. But the conversation that I had with my oncologist about how she dealt with death and how like the way she explained it to me was just like putting everything into a little box and filing it away and not dealing with it. And or claiming that she dealt with it later, but that's obviously not what she was doing. But can understand knowing that how one who's practicing medicine, specifically oncology, and how they would end up being staunchly religious because you are literally watching death every day. And that has to affect you in a way that is what even is life? What am I doing here? What is going on? You know, that's
when you put it that way,
how do I find peace?
That makes a lot of sense.
Exactly. I think it has less to do with like higher power, God, Jesus, Christianity, and more to do with like, why are we here? And what does this all mean? And that just happens to be the avenue in which they find it or are looking for it, have chosen to look for it. Cause obviously we don't find it until we die. And then we know.
Yeah.
So talk to me about the experience of kind of putting, it's one thing to go through everything that you went through, which is a feat in and of itself, but then reliving that and putting that back on paper, like putting that in a book and then releasing that into the world. What does that feel like? What was that experience writing this book?
Okay. A couple answers to that.
This is a big question.
I've just got a lot of feelings. Yeah. I wrote this in 2016 to 2017 and I've revamped it since. I self-published it originally on Amazon in 2017. And like, I had so many feelings around it because of this, because of what I had been through. And I was like, should I not have done that? And Emma, who's going to sue me? Which is why I decided to use musical so I could change all the names and not get liability and all that. But that was a scary moment. And then there were a couple people, because when you do big things and people see you doing big things, they of course have to tear you down to feel better about themselves. And so I had a couple of people come to me and be like, there's mistakes in the book. And I was like, okay, couldn't afford a copy editor. So it is what it is. The story is still there. Enjoy it.
Deal with it.
Yeah. Like, you know that there's a period that's supposed to be there. Have a good day. It didn't save. Whatever.
Take your little pen and
write it in yourself if it makes you feel better.
Let me read your book.
Yeah, seriously. Where's yours? Yeah. I'll buy it.
It's your book. Read it. You edit.
But so I just let it sit and die. And then this year, with things being on par with my life being absolutely insane, I came out of like performance retirement and booked the national tour of Chicago. And then right before we went on the road, I was replaced at the last minute by a friend. I love him. He let me know. He told me ahead of time and it worked out. It's fine. But because of that, and because I was going to be working with their press team on the road, I was like, let me hire a publicist. Let me reissue this book because this year is my 10-year cancer anniversary. Our opening night is on the actual day I got the call. There's so much alignment with this. Let's do it. And in the middle of all that is when I found out that I was being replaced. And so I took a 3-week vacation to Europe and drank my way through Paris and London. Had a great time. No regrets. And maybe one or two. But I came back to the States and it was like, okay, actually, the book came out on my birthday while I was in Paris, which was cool. And so then the whole like press rollout of this along the way has been really wonderful. And none of that would have happened if I wouldn't have been really replaced on a national tour or at all. Like, as far as the way that I feel about it, like I went from having this like really traumatic brain dump to get the book out of my head to publishing it, to having it, to feeling really ashamed of it, like for a really long time, and then being energized to re-release it, to get backhanded again. And then now I just feel like I'm an island and I'm doing what I should have done the first time now. And so where I stand right now with the book is just great. Like, I'm so proud of it. I'm so happy with the way it looks. My copy editor did an amazing job at the design and everything else. And I'm just pleased. And it was hard. It was a hard road to get here for it. But in the end, it was worth it.
So I actually used to work for Barnes & Noble for 7 years.
What do you think about their new renaissance that they're having right now?
Oh, they're having a new renaissance.
I haven't paid. So I haven't
they're
paid much.
They're like opening new stores, like new Barnes & Noble stores are opening, which I think is amazing.
So I have seen a little bit about that. And I did see at some point they were trying to focus on being more of a local bookstore and tailoring their stores to the community around them instead of just kind of going with the conglomerate thing.
Yeah. Smart.
back when I was with them, this was when Borders was still around. It was a bit ago. Yeah. RIP. But I was a community relations manager. So I would work with a lot of new authors and existing authors, famous people sometimes. And I know it's a challenge to promote a book.
Because people don't
easy.
Read.
There's thousands and thousands of books in a Barnes & Noble.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been really wild. And the thing is, yes, millions of book sales would be great, but that was never the goal. The goal was was twofold. It was to have something in my hand that I was actually proud of that looked smashing compared to the last one. And then the second part of that is that I'm adapting it for screen. So this is going to be a musical episodic, like streaming service based TV show. Like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend or Schmigadoon or Schmicago or whatever iteration that is right now. And that's the real road here. Like, if I sell tons of books, awesome. If I don't, and this is just like personal brand building, for lack of a better term, centered around the book to get to that point when we do adapt for screen and we're at that point, we're ready to get into pre-pro and all that, then great. Can't wait.
So how long do you think the screenplay is going to take to come about?
The pilot script is about half done. We have a couple songs written. They're not done. Everything's in flux, but I would love, love, love to be at a point where I am done with it and happy with it by the end of the summer, and we can start fundraising and getting things together for fall pre-pro.
Wow.
Fast.
That's an aggressive timeline.
It's an aggressive timeline. I'm an aggressive person.
I can tell. So what, for the screenplay adaptation, are you going to stick with that? Obviously the musical theme, but are you going to stick with the same musicals? Or are you going off in a different tangent?
We're going off in a different direction. Obviously, like, source material is what it is. And thankfully I don't need to spend. And I think this is probably why it seems like a little bit of an aggressive timeline. I don't have to spend time studying the source material. I wrote it. I know what it is. Yeah. And I know where I want it to go. So that kind of cuts out a lot of time there. But yeah, it's going to be sticking with musical themes and a lot of really fun, like parody, campy, like very light on the dark humor situation. But I do want it to be really funny. Similarly to how Crazy Ex-Girlfriend was really actually about mental health, but you didn't really get that until like maybe halfway through season one. That kind of thing.
Okay. So trying to keep it as lighthearted as possible. But
oh, yeah, it'll definitely be a comedy. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, like I said, that was what I really loved about the book. I was thoroughly surprised. that a subject that has so much gravity could be, I don't want to say entertaining, because that's almost
But that was the point. That was literally, I'm so glad you're saying this. I'm probably half feverish right now, but I'm so glad you're saying this. That's what I wanted. And like, people I know can tell me that, and it's, yeah, okay, cool. You're going to tell me what I want to hear, because we're friends and I love you. But someone that I don't know, that I'm just here, and like, you took it upon yourself to read the book on your own accord, which is so touching. And that's what you got out of it. That means I did my job, and that's the best validation.
Oh, yeah.
So thank you.
There were a couple times that I was laughing out loud. I have Alexa in my ear. Well, I was also doing some home renovations, so I was like painting trim, listening to your book at the same time, and I just start laughing out of nowhere because there was a joke about Polish sausage and other things that just hit the right way. Got me laughing.
Oh my God. And my parents have read this book.
Oh my goodness. And there were just,
they were there for it.
So. Gay men can relate to, right?
Yeah.
So as a gay man, there were certain things that you were going through that I could relate to. And like the experience with certain friends and how some people just will ghost you for no reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then expect to be
just
acknowledged, like, after the fact.
Right. That was the craziest thing. And it was just like my best friend who was with me for that scenario, his name's Bobby, and I just saw him last night, and he was with me for that. And it's just what? The audacity of it all.
Yep.
But yeah, no, it's pretty crazy. I think one of the points that I really wanted to drive home too. And in the efforts to keeping things family friendly, I will, please tell me if I need to not speak any further.
Can snip it out if we need to.
Sure. But like, the idea of wanting to be validated and to feel good about yourself, and the ways in which we seek that out, whether it be a coping mechanism or externally, whether, you know, alcohol or pot or sex with strangers, like, it's, I think that was one of the big things I wanted to drive home, because that's not something that you think of when you think of people, I guess, in general, but then also when you're under a circumstance as dire as this, like, you know, cancer patients don't get their like day to be like, I want to have sex.
Like, I can imagine that would be
like, you just assume that it's like, no, you don't, you're inundated with drugs.
Yeah.
And so like, the whole relationships of friends and people and yourself was a big thing I wanted to drive home. The whole like, dating and sex thing, it was something I really wanted to drive home, because those were the things that were the most surprising to me in that experience. We're like, these are still things. I'm a patient. I have no life or identity whatsoever, but these things are still happening. And I wanted to talk about it.
Yeah. And those are things that, I mean, I'm sure most people kind of can imagine themselves being put in a situation like that, but they can't necessarily understand everything that comes with that. Like, having such a dire diagnosis and a extreme treatment and all the side effects that come with that. It's not, you know, obviously just when you're in the hospital getting treatment that you're affected by it, but there's after effects. Things don't work the same way they did when you before you went into the hospital. Before you got sick, that changes the dynamics of every relationship that you have.
From that point on, too. And another thing that I'll say to this, too, is I think a more tangible line that we can draw, whether it's lateral or otherwise, is any kind of media, whether that be a play or a musical or a TV show or a movie, centered around like the height of the AIDS crisis. And when I was writing this, I just kept thinking about that. Like, those were men who were in their prime, for the most part, who were thrown into a hospital. Mm-hmm. And if they were lucky enough to leave at all, it was like they still wanted to be touched and held and cared for. And it's very much a similar, I can assume, a similar feeling where it's, yeah, this thing is happening to me, but I'm not dead. So like, I still feel things. I would like to feel more things.
Yeah. And in those types of situations, especially with the AIDS crisis, unfortunately, people became social pariahs, right?
And that's, you know, I mean, whether this is like me channeling that kind of thing or whatnot, but I didn't tell anybody. It was a very under the table hush kind of thing, where like my closest friends knew, my family knew, but I didn't post anything on social media. I kept it to myself. And I just wanted to fly under the radar because I didn't want to be seen as the sick kid. I had already had people making assumptions that I actually had AIDS and was dying in the hospital from that. And I was lying to everyone. And these were like people I had worked with, had just worked with, who were supposed to be friends who said this shit. And it's a whole minefield. And the thing of it is, like, we're talking about all like the scary, sad, downtrodden things. But one thing that I will say that I try to also make a point of saying is that even though that period of time was so scary and weird, I still have such good memories from that time. Like,
yeah,
the friends that were there for me, like, we had a ball. Like, during my stem cell transplant, like, we were the party room, man. Like, the nurses made our room the last stop so that they could hang out with us because we were fun. We were having a good time. There were these two nurses. I think one was Emily and the other one was Sarah. And they were both like these long-haired blonde Barbie dolls that were just like tall and skulking around the floor, making their rounds in probably about my age, probably about 24, 25 at the time. And once we got to know each other after a couple of days, I was there for 3 weeks and my friends were in and out and we were having like parties and doing all the things and being ridiculous. They'd make their rounds and we'd be last so that you could hang out with us and close the door and pull the shades down. And yeah, that was the worst time in the whole experience for me, but we had fun and we created these great memories that I can look back on that period of time and not be like, oh, I had cancer. I'd be like, do you remember the time that like Bobby got stoned and was eating KFC off of a tea platter? Like, that's what it was all about for me, was like, if I was going to go, if that was going to be my time, then we were going to pull out all the stops and do all the things. And yeah, certainly I was limited physically or otherwise during portions of that time, but I threw parties and had get-togethers with friends as often as I possibly could. And like, we'd meet at bars. I drank my way through chemo. It was like, who cares? Let's do it.
Wow.
It was great.
Now,
only because I lived. Don't recommend.
I imagine that alcohol and chemo, that combination,
not a good one. No, not recommended. It was like, I remember it was my third, I think it was my third round of chemo. I looked like it was right. It was the night. Was it the night? It was close to when Whitney Houston died. No, that was the year later. Never mind. Sorry. Same bar. I spent a lot of time in this bar. My friend Brooke was a bartender at Brother Jimmy's, which was like a chain here in New York. I think it's national actually, but it was a Southern barbecue place. And she was like head bartender, just queen bee, queen of the castle. And I was doing this chemo drip that was like 7 hours. They told me it was three. And so I planned for three. And they were like, okay, we're just going to up the dose a little bit and it'll be another 4 hours. And I was like, what? And so I basically told the nurse, like, pump this shit up as high as it can go. I want to get out of here. And the scary thing is that they did it.
What?
And that dosage could have me. And then I left and went to Brooke's bar and got tanked. So the fact that my liver did not just like self-eject out of my body is like an absolute miracle, because I was like, that should never have happened, first of all. And my doctor said, she said I could have one or two, but that was it. And I was like, great, I'm gonna have 20. Have a good night.
Oh,
it was a whole thing. But again, like, pointing back to the coping mechanisms and the self-sabotage patterns we as humans have anyway, and then adding into that conversation like the queer experience and the self-sabotage patterns we have around that, and then also then having a life-threatening illness that is like in full bloom, you know, and then self-sabotage patterns and coping mechanisms around that. So like, I was a hot mess for a really long time.
How was the hangover?
I don't remember if I even had one. I think my body was like, oh, this isn't chemo. I got this. This is good. More of that.
My body doesn't like alcohol.
No,
I just can't even do it.
I had to stop drinking. I'm like coming up to 100 days again. I do like pockets where I'll do 100 days of sobriety here and then I'll break it for a month. And then I'm like, okay, cool. Now we're going to do 200 days of sobriety and then I'll break it. And I'm at the tail end of 100 now, where I would traditionally be like, nah, let's go for a Manhattan. And just the idea of having a Manhattan is just, nope.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
It helps me that I think I'm allergic to alcohol. Like, I actually have to take like an allergy pill. Otherwise, I get
a
stuffy nose. And yeah. And my husband hates alcohol because he has a really heightened sense of taste. So yeah, he can tell the difference between.
He got a.
Yeah, he does.
If this were not a family friendly podcast, the directions we could go. He's got a bougie mouth. I love it. Get him on here. Let's talk to him.
I wish. He is just not the type to jump on a podcast.
He's very in person.
It's funny because if you looked at the two of us, you would assume that he's the extrovert.
Interesting.
Like, yeah. He's a year older than me, but he looks like he's 19.
God, he looks like he's in high school still sometimes.
Oh, Lord.
He does.
Well, it'll come in handy later in life.
Yeah, I know, right?
Lucky dog.
But no, he's not. He's actually a professional dancer. Oh!
Hi.
Hello. I'm not the one interrupting this time.
Yes, I think now. Like I said, Edward, this is a community podcast, so sometimes we get people that pop in.
Amazing. Hi, friends.
Hi.
Scythe 629 is actually a theater student.
Oh, my God. I can tell you
friend?
All of the
yeah, things. I'd be happy to just introduce us real quick. So my name is Trevor, and this is my friend Maya. We both are in college right now for theater. So, yeah, and, like, we are home right now, so we're not in the best of equipment ranges. But, yeah, we're just home for Easter break from college. Yeah, but, yeah, we're here. Hi.
Where are you? I don't want to commandeer you guys, but I'm a theater kid. I've worked professionally in theater for 20 years. So I'm just like, where are you going?
Mystery school. Yeah.
School.
Okay, yeah, see. Good. Okay. Credibility. Come on.
Okay. Yeah.
People know what that school is.
So. Yeah. Like, yep. We are not in the musical theater department. That's awesome. We're just in the regular theater.
But still, we're still top five.
Oh, great. You'll
still top five. That's okay.
Good. You'll actually work then. That's great. Yeah. No, you will. Absolutely. But oh my God, listen, again, I'm not commandeering here, but make your own things is the only thing that if I can impress anything upon you, it's that you should make your own
people
things.
People do say that.
Like, yeah, create your own show, create your own web series, create anything that you can that will distract you from this industry or it will kill you. It is so hard. It is so hard to just be, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I just mean in the sense that like sitting around waiting for permission for someone to give you a job is so hard and it eats away at you. So if you're constantly creating things for yourself, that will feed you in a way that no other job ever will. And when that job goes away, because they're not permanent, you will still have something. And that if I can impress anything upon anyone who's coming out in the theater ranks, that is it.
Gotcha. Thank you. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense.
That's great advice. And feel free to commandeer, by the way.
No, I'm so not a commandeer kind of person, but I'm excited to meet theater people.
Yeah. Gotcha. We got you.
Yeah. I wish I was a theater kid.
Hey, what is the plan? I will always do one. Exactly. Mm-hmm. What are you guys going to do? Are you moving to LA, New York, Atlanta, Chicago? What's the plan?
Chicago.
Everyone thinks Chicago. I do want to go to New York because I genuinely just do like that city. Like, it's not, of course it is just a very big theater district, but I really do want to go there. It seems really fun and dandy.
Me too, personally.
Where I've lived for the last 18 years.
I really love New York. I think maybe Chicago. I don't know if I'm going to just go there like straight away because that's not realistic for life. I would love to go to New York.
Why not?
Because money. I don't have money. And most people don't have money.
You got into that school.
You will find a way to find money and make money. Like that, and that's the thing. That's another thing. Everyone has money. Especially the people like in the higher ups. I hate this conversation. It drives me nuts. Artists have to get out of this headspace of there's no money. There are so many Broadway shows right now. I just had one of my good friends is a producer on a show that's coming up right now called Cowboy Bob. They just did a big stage reading in Dallas for investors and whatnot. And she was like, I'm running after this guy. There's just no money in theater. And then the next sentence was like, I'm chasing this guy down for $150,000 to put into the show. And it's okay. So there is, in fact, money in theater if some guy is just willing to hand over $150,000 for funsies.
Yeah.
Because the theater model is terrible. No one makes money in theater. So, like, this is fun for him. So I would impress upon you, like, also there's money everywhere. Mm-hmm. You just have to find it. Like, especially in New York, it's like hemorrhaging money out of the sidewalks. You just have to find it.
Yeah. I think I just don't want to be one of those people who are like sharing a one bedroom with like my six roommates. I think that's a big thing. I don't want to be in debt, which is hard, but I don't want to, or not too much. I say not too much. I'm trying to be realistic. I really am not trying to pay until my kids go to college. You know what I'm saying? That's not the life I'm trying to live.
Yeah, but honestly, like, even if you have to for a little bit, that's fine. However, you also get to say, you also get to say no to that situation. So if you're looking at a bedroom, a one bedroom with six people in it, you don't have to say yes to it.
I know. I personally, I'm looking at a lot of people actually in our peers are looking at going and living in New Jersey. And then from there, like just busing and like working and commuting to New York. Which I think is definitely a nice spot.
And look, I've been here for 18 years and I have lived alone for 90%.
Wow. Good for you.
I have figured out a way to like just work my ass off to make sure that can happen. And it's not impossible. I'm not, I don't come from money. I'm not a little Nepo baby. Like, I made this happen.
Good for you.
And it's doable. You totally can do it. Here I am giving a pep talk to the youths.
Back to I invited Trevor to come on just because I thought it was a great opportunity for you guys to talk about theater and acting. And
my God,
and,
girl, we'll be here all night.
And pass down advice, right? Because that's, I think that's important for the older gays like me and you to pass on advice to the
older
fetuses.
How dare you?
James is the oldest.
I think
he's James, how old are you?
Oh, no, I mean, figuratively.
Age check. Damn.
I can't remember my age. I was born in 89.
I'm the oldest bitch here.
I don't know, man.
I thought we were close. Like
21 and three quarters, bro. I'm pretty old, too. I'm getting up there.
I am the youngest
person. Internally, I'm 80
something. I have clothing older than you.
That's insane. Kind of
It's at my parents' house and it doesn't fit me anymore, but I have it.
I just turned 20.
I just threw out clothes from high school.
A few months ago. Like, no, not even a few. February.
We were just talking about
this. I'm acting like I'm way older.
Right. What are you, 27? 25.
Oh, wow.
Get out.
I feel like I'm 80, so.
No, we were, like, looking back at old photos of ourselves when we were your age and not realizing how absolutely epically hot we were. And so, like,
I know I'm fully aware. I'm, like, very attractive. I'm hot and sexy. I love it.
You're gorgeous. You. But what it,
that's how I feel like
I'm probably, I might offend you or like provoke a facial expression, but if you haven't seen Schitt's Creek,
I get compared to him a lot
with your life, but the mother says that one line to the woman, and I don't remember what her name is, but she says, take as many naked pictures of yourself when you're young as you can, because one day you're going to look back and be like, with much kinder eyes. And I don't remember what the quote is, but I wish I had naked photos of me when I was 21, because goddamn.
Oh, I don't have that confidence. Yeah.
I don't remember that quote.
It's a good quote.
I've been catfished with someone. Yeah, oh my gosh. I went on a date with a guy who apparently was straight, but for some reason we matched on Tinder and for some reason we went on a date and he catfished me with himself because like the pictures were from a year before and he did not look the same. So it was just very interesting. And he was, we did not have a second date. He brought up some really weird topics randomly, but fun stuff. Not really fun stuff.
I shudder to ask. Anyway.
I don't know.
Edward, what are your thoughts on dating apps?
Oh my God.
Yeah. Fair.
The dating apps. Good Lord.
That came up in your book, I thought.
It sure did. I avidly use them. And I actually, now, James, yes, I'm having a memory stir of a literal part of the book that I mentioned, that I catfished someone with myself.
See, this is what I'm saying.
Oh,
that's right. This was what goes on. I'm telling you.
No, I catfished a whole neighborhood, to be honest. Wow. I was having a really rough day. Oh, the book is about cancer. I had cancer many years ago.
I'm so sorry.
And there was a day where I showed the radiation tech my old headshot, and he and his like tech assistant people were like, that was you? And I was just like, oh God, I look
I have been in situations shit.
So I,
where I have seen like
so
my
I
cast help. Members or like my director on the app.
Oh God, don't do
no,
that.
No, I don't like I literally
really
don't do that.
Yeah, it has. Ooh. But you don't know them because they were
she wants the
no
tea.
You don't know them at all. But yeah, no,
oh, it's just, okay, because like, I was like because I was like, there have been some instances with you. You think you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think so.
With, yeah.
Drama. Oh, yeah. No. Sorry, I didn't interrupt you.
Do we need to Eric saw him.
No, it's okay.
Do we need to cancel your school? There is drama at that school that we
can get into. Like department stuff.
I have no doubt. But what I was going to say is that, like, I took that, oh my God, that was you. And I just completely went into a dark hole and I went home, fired up all the apps, used all my photos from pre-cancer and got all these people to come over. Because I was feeling really lowly about myself and it was what I thought was going to make me feel better. And surprise, it didn't.
And those dating apps.
Oh, hello. Yes, you put the quote in the sign. Yeah. Perfect.
I did.
Then allow me to offer you some advice. Take 1,000 naked pictures of yourself now. You may currently think, oh, I'm too spooky. Yes. No, nobody wants to see my tiny boobies. But believe me, one day you will look at those photos with much kinder eyes and say, dear God, it was a beautiful thing.
There.
That was very Jennifer Coolidge, but it's adjacent. Okay. It's close.
Here, you know what?
Allow me to offer you some advice. Take 1,000 naked pictures of yourself now. Take the dog. Dummy ass.
That's on my resume. That is.
It should be. My friend Charles has made an entire career out of
that. That's awesome.
I wish I could do Cher, but it always turns into Carol Channing.
Mm. Oh my God, that's
Trevor funny. Reminds me of a young
Jim Carrey.
A young what?
I've gotten that Jim before. Carrey.
I can see that. Same. I think it's the hair.
Do I know who I look like?
In the facial.
Who do you look like, Ella?
A young me.
Aww.
I look like my old mom.
Before we go further off the rails, Edward, is there anything that you'd like to bring up, pitch to the audience? That way we can make sure that we leave that with a bang.
Sure. I mean, just buy my book.
I just did.
Buy my merch.
Oh my God. Dude. Oh my God.
It really is. Sales happening
in real time. Thank you. Honestly, James, that has made my day because it's so rare that, first of all, anyone hosting a podcast actually reads the damn thing. But then also to have an unbiased human like give exactly the kind of feedback that I was hoping for is nailing it. So thank you so much.
I have to say one of my favorite parts was the name that you gave your growth, Seymour.
Seymour.
Seymour. I loved that.
We were just listening to that in the car.
Yeah, no, so and James, you know this, but this is a very true, like, play-by-play story of how this happened. I was doing hairspray in Reno at a casino.
Were you seaweed?
I was corny
Ooh,
when
awesome.
I was
corny.
Prettier.
Yeah.
Oh. Revlon medium dark all over here. She was tan, but I had this growth growing under my arm and it kept getting bigger. And during a show, I had this choreography where my arm went back and it felt like something ripped and it was so awful. And so I like finished the show and got dressed and I searched for a hospital and I went to an emergency room and they did an ultrasound and it was inconclusive. And they gave me this long list of weird shit that it could have been. Sorry, things that it could have been. And none of it made sense, but it was right before my day off and my friend Brian, who lived in Sacramento, would drive over to see the show. We'd go out, we'd go back to Sacramento and I'd spend my days off in either Sacramento or San Francisco. And so after I left the emergency room, I met him at this bar. It was called the 5-Star. It was terrible. And we were sitting at the bar and I'm out to him in a sense of what was going on with this growth under my arm. And I made this joke about how maybe it's one of those things that I later learned is called like a teratoma or something that like grows in your body and it grows hair and teeth and like fingernails and things.
Yeah.
They're really creepy. It's like a cellular anomaly or something. They're terrible. And so we were joking about this and I was like, maybe it's my twin. And he was like, if you're... And like we made some kind of like pregnancy joke. Oh, finally got pregnant in the wrong place, but we did it. Literally Little Shop was playing on the TV in the bar. And he was just like, he was like, you're going to have to name it. And I was like, oh yeah, I guess you're right. And so we just looked at the TV and we both just looked at each other. Seymour.
Because it keeps growing.
And it stuck. Yeah. So we just left it there and it was Seymour for the whole time.
Cute.
It was so silly. Sorry,
that musical always gets me singing. I'm sorry.
I know.
No, it's okay. I have come to the conclusion that I am no longer ashamed of the fact that Little Shop is probably my favorite musical.
Why would you ever be ashamed?
Oh, it's not mine.
See, mine.
Mamma Mia.
I feel like when you're a theater
I'm so gay.
Person, I feel like when you're a theater person, people expect you to say something like prolific and profound, really? Like passion. Oh. By
mine is Mean Girls the Musical. I can't
relate. Okay. I feel like you can do better than that. But anyway.
I've been going to art school since it's in the first grade, so maybe I can't relate. I've just always been surrounded by theater.
Maybe.
People. But I know people who aren't that, and they don't... I don't know.
Yeah.
They don't expect that of me.
Little Shop to me is like the most perfect musical ever made. Hmm.
I haven't actually watched the entire thing. I have this really bad habit.
You gotta go see the show.
I have this ADHD bad habit of just watching clips of things.
Oh, listen.
Until I get the general idea of what it is about.
Yeah.
I also live in a state that like I don't have theater options.
Oh, yes, you do. Where are you?
Michigan.
Oh my god, you have so many theater options out there.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god, there's like the barn.
Or, what is it?
There's the barn.
What's the Fox Theater?
I don't know. The Fox Theater is a big touring house, so you probably get all the big nationals through there.
Yeah.
But where in Michigan are you?
Near Ann Arbor.
Oh, that's close enough. I think.
Yeah.
But you got a plan though. You got a plan for that.
Okay, you have the Michigan Theater.
You have the
Ann Arbor. Ann Arbor Civic Theater. I guess I just never
thought about it.
Michigan State Theater.
This is your sign.
Arthur Miller. Mm. You have so much theater. Yeah. You were lying.
Arthur Miller. Everyone. That takes me back to high school.
Yeah. And also, like, Hollywood in LA is like a 6-hour flight away from you, like 7-8-hour flight. So that's nothing. Like, you have no excuses.
Oh, yeah, I'm made of money.
Yeah, London is like only 12 hours from you.
Me
like,
too.
I work in a school.
Little Shop is a phenomenal piece of work.
Let me see what it's...
You referenced... What were some of the other ones that you referenced? Because I can't remember everything. I think it was...
Oh, my God.
You did reference Moulin Rouge, right?
Moulin Rouge. No, I don't think I do. I reference Chicago. I reference Cats. I reference...
Memory?
Baby. I reference...
Maybe it was Chicago.
It was probably Chicago. The one with the ballet scene.
You know,
the Hungarian,
the Ukrainian. Oh, I thought it was Ukrainian. It's Hungarian.
The rope trick where the girl dies. One of them dies. A lot of people die in that.
Yeah.
In Chicago.
So many people. Yeah. I have a sordid history with Chicago.
I would not be a good podcast host if I didn't dig into the sordid history with Chicago.
Oh my
God. The musical or the city?
Both.
Because that's literally another one of the movies I have seen. I've seen the movie version Chicago.
That is also the most perfect movie musical ever. It's so good.
It's so good. I love it.
I will say, James, the Moulin Rouge film version is better than the stage version. And the film version of Chicago is also better than the stage version. I would not pit them against each other. I would have a really hard time with that.
I just love Moulin Rouge. I thought Ewan McGregor was absolutely phenomenal.
Oh, he's great.
I need him on my list. I'm pretty sure I own it somewhere.
He was the one that made me want to like belt my ass off when I was singing. So good.
A topic you might bring up, but if not, I do have a question for Edward that I like to ask, like, professional theater workers.
Go for it.
So, in the world, sure, in this world of, like, so heavily commercialized, we're here to make money and not produce art theater that we're getting in, how do you still, like, I don't know, because, like, it's definitely, you have to do the same show over and over again, doing the same commercialized, highly poppy, like, gear, like, make money nowadays. It's so much that. There's not as much art in it. So, how do you keep your...
It always has been.
Yeah, yeah. But I feel like it's even worse nowadays. But yeah, so what's... How do you personally keep your art and keep your like inspiration in it? You know, how do you not get like drowned out by the commercialism? Wrong answer.
I don't think about it in those terms. Mm. I think when you're doing the show, that's not what you're thinking about. Hmm. Like, I think from the outside looking in, it's very much this like plastic, like gross recycled, you know, preservative chemical version of musical theater. But when you're doing it, like it just is such a different thing. I have friends who are in Bad Cinderella right now, and I guarantee you they're not like, this is the most perfect piece of musical theater ever made.
Oy.
But they're getting those Andrew Lloyd Webber paychecks, and they're like out on stage probably having fun. I haven't seen it yet, but I guarantee you that none of them are like taking it seriously. They're like, I'm getting my $3,000 a week. I'm having a good day. I look beautiful in these costumes because that cast is hot. And they're like, they're doing the things. And pointing back to before when I was talking about making your own thing so you have something. That's another great example of why you should have something of your own that you are also creating. Because if you do get into a show that is not fulfilling, that you're just there for the paycheck and like you have to go do the same thing eight plus times a week, then you have something else that you can go home to that you also get to create and do and feed that part of you without having to be like, ugh, I have to go do like Mamma Mia again.
Yeah, I think that's great advice, not even just for theater people, right? As a business professional, I would give that advice to people like, I work for a battery company. Is that the most exciting thing that I could do with my life? No.
No.
But I do this.
Totally. But in capitalism, exactly. In capitalism, where we have to make money to pay the bills and pay for to live, you do what you need to get the money to fuel what you want. And so I just think of any work that I do where I get money, that money just goes right through me and into the things that I'm creating. I don't think of wealth in terms of like how much money is in my bank account. I think of it in terms of like how much money am I putting towards what I want to do? And if it's zero, then it's okay. Got to go figure out another money income source so that I can like keep myself going. For me, it's never about, per se, again, capitalism, like how much money is in my bank account. It's more, what am I creating? What am I putting out?
Unless it's $3,900, right?
Right. That's, yes.
Then you might think about it a little bit longer.
That's also the context of having to pay to live, literally live. If you don't give us this, you will die. That's a little different.
Yeah. Sorry, that was a reference to the
James book. Actually read the book that I wrote for this interview, which should. Never happened. So I appreciate the point back to that. Yeah.
Again, seriously, if you do get a chance and you want a entertaining story that you can relate to Edward's sexuality and maybe some of the struggles just in general,
first chapter,
I highly recommend the book. It was very funny. It doesn't sound like it would be funny based on the description.
Got that dark humor.
Well, because it has the C word. It says cancer. It is a very interesting.
Hey, real quick.
Looking Edward, at what's the title of the preface.
Cancer, Musical Theater, and Other Chronic Illnesses.
Wow.
Mm. It does sound very educational.
Does it?
A no, little bit.
My friend Alex.
My brain is kind of stagnant on educational stuff because I'm a history major, so I just read a lot.
No, I hear you. My friend articles. Alex came up with the title. I cannot take credit for that. We were just like, I think we were having lunch one day, and I was like, I don't know what to call it. And I was like explaining it to him, and he just out of nowhere, the first thing he said, cancer, musical theater, and other chronic
illnesses. He's been cooking on that for a while. Like,
he's been here before.
He's been here before. He's jumped timelines. But he definitely... He's credited in the book because I don't do that. I don't steal things from people. Yeah. He's brilliant. Love him.
I think it's an apt title. Definitely covers all your bases.
All your bases.
I'm making up words now.
What was the word you
That's
made?
That's my
up?
Job.
I said basises instead of bases.
Basises.
I'm not sure.
James, it's my job to be the kooky one.
Sometimes I just can't help myself.
We can all be kooky.
I didn't have enough chances to do dad jokes this week. So.
Oh my God. Wait, y'all. Jeez. The musical theater of it all. What day is today? Saturday. So on Tuesday, I went to the opening night of Shucked, which just opened.
I heard about that. Yeah.
On Broadway.
Wait, what is it?
Shucked.
It is.
Oh, okay.
It's called Shucked. It is Dad Jokes, the musical. It is one of the best things I've ever seen. I laughed so hard. My friend Catherine's one of the writing producers on it. And it is just like punchline after punchline.
That's awesome.
It is so funny. Like the ones that have stuck with me, like the lead woman is fighting with her fiance and he was like, you're making a huge mistake. And she turns to him and she goes, no, a mistake was burying grandma on a slope. You have to think about that one, children. You'll get it in a second.
I got it. But it then just is so, it's so amazing that I can't even laugh.
Yeah. And there's another one that's, I think that if you have time to take a bullet for someone, the other person has time to move.
Oh, I love
And it's
that.
All of that. It's just, all of them take a second and then you're like,
yeah,
that is so funny.
It's so good. And my favorite one, and I will could go on forever, but I'll stop with this one. My favorite one was, remember when we were making sandcastles with grandma until grandpa took the urn away?
That's good.
But I'm telling you, this is the whole show, front to back. That and it's hurts. Alex Newell, and she just sings the shit out of it. Oh, it's so good.
I came across it on TikTok.
Of course.
And I heard, like, one song. I don't even remember what it is now, because it was a couple days ago. But, like, I immediately stopped watching TikTok, went to Spotify, and pulled up the playlist and started listening to it.
It was probably Independence, the one.
Yeah, I think it. Well, that's, she was at a well. I don't remember. This was, I don't have great memory.
This was, like, two was hours okay. ago.
It's
like,
so fun.
Give them a break.
You may have seen Catherine's TikTok if you've seen any of the Shock TikToks, because she's like a big theater TikTok person, which is how she got involved with all of this. But she and I went to Shock opening together. It was nice. Fun.
Wonderful.
How has TikTok changed theater?
Ugh. Exponentially. The thing is, okay, this is for the children. Keep in mind, you are the next generation. So Broadway has a habit of not acting in its best interest. Theater in general has a habit of being like 40 years behind the curve. And so with theater influencers now being a thing, we're like, Catherine's going to hit 100,000 followers this year for sure.
Oh, gee, yeah.
And she did that within a year. And that has opened doors for her. And that has gotten her countless free tickets that I have attended shows with her for $0. But we are going to start to see, because the younger people are starting to, and by younger, I mean people my age, because the people in charge are 80. People my age are starting to take over the powers that be slowly. It is happening slowly. But we're now starting to have the conversations of budgeting influencers into theater budgets to invite them to shows, pay them to do content, give them free tickets, have them do press. Because it is changing the accessibility of theater. Like, Shucked is like a sleeper hit. There's press all over New York. I'm not sure what kind of traditional media or marketing they're doing online as far as, like, ads on platforms are concerned. But the fact that, like, Hella, you've seen this show on TikTok is enough for me, from a producer standpoint, to be like, okay, TikTok is where we need to be. Like, even just standing with Catherine at the theater, like, so many people came up to her and were like, oh my God, we love your TikToks. That's why we're here. And that happened to her every day during previews, because she was there, like, with the creative team and everything else. And people just kept saying, we bought tickets because we saw your TikTok. We love your TikToks. That's why we came. And so it really is just like the democratizing of the visibility of Broadway for people who are not in New York, who are not in a tri-state area, who are not in a theater-centric city. So that they can see and experience theater in a almost kind of civilian kind of way, because she does the get ready with me and the come along with me to the theater kind of things.
Oh, I love this.
Can watch a person on the sidewalk of New York, like, walking to a theater, getting their ticket, going to the show, and you have this mini, like, edited down experience with them. And that's nothing we've ever been able to have before that showcases theater in a totally different way. And then on the performer side of things, some of the kids that were on the Chicago tour with me have got a ton more followers because of the content that they're creating on the road. So that's going to open up doors for them later. And whether TikTok stays around or it becomes a different platform, or we move to Clapper or Lemonade or whatever the heck is going to take its place, it's important for you to be visible in that sense. And I think 3 to 5 years ago, me would have been like, ugh, followers don't matter. And they don't if you're the right person for the job. But if two people who are the right people for the job come into a room and one of them has 100,000 followers and the other one's not even on, I'm not going to tell you what I think the answer to that is going to be. Because I think you know. That, because from a producer standpoint, that's free advertising dollars. Because you as an entity, as a person, as an influencer, if you will, with a certain amount of followership, are going to post content of the show. That's hundreds of thousands of dollars in ad money that they don't need to spend, because you are going to create content and story around what you're doing in regards to that show.
I know. On the flip side of that, though, I forget who it was, but with Mean Girls, they did have, like, a celebrity cast who was a big, he was just a big, like, influencer. I forget what his name was, but people were upset with that because he's not, like, a musical person at all. He's not a Broadway theater. He's, like, no history in performing arts at all. So then there's these, the flip side of that, of, like, instead of qualified people getting hired because they have this following. It's unqualified people getting hired because they have this following. And that's a big thing.
It was
that's
like
going
that
on.
Whole thing of Emilia when people being now like the whole thing with who was that Halsey? And she was like, oh yeah, I have to get a song that's going to blow up on TikTok before they let me release my album or like that whole kind of thing. And then there were people who were New Year's Eve. Because they had a TikTok.
So I will totally agree that that is stupid. But that is also the game that we're playing. So you can either play the game or you can be upset that the game is being played. And I would say to you that, yes, people who aren't qualified or aren't good are making it to Broadway because of their followership. And this is, again, a twofold answer. Pretending that theater has ever been a meritocracy will only hurt you in the end. It doesn't matter how good you are. There's so many other things that go into that, that by pretending that the most talented person in the world is going to get the job is just going to frustrate you. The other part of that is that if people who are good, who are talented, are willing to swallow the pill and be like, you know what, I'm just going to create content and get that, get those numbers up and build that audience, then we will start to see people who have the followership who are also good get the jobs.
Right.
So it's like beating the people, beating them at their own game, essentially.
I mean, Trevor, you have a pretty good following on TikTok.
I could do a little flex. I have 230K on TikTok.
Okay, that's pretty good.
Pretty solid. Pretty solid.
10 times what I have.
I definitely don't have that many. It's but okay, whenever, I guess. Like I was just in a show and I did kind of like a get ready with me. And I did like my makeup and I was like, oh, this is like my costume to become queen for Veil of Thieves. And now it's like one of my most viewed videos. Like everybody saw it. And then like a bunch of people from like my school, like stuff, like came and saw the show just because of that. And I was like, wow.
Yeah. And that's what we're looking at in the marketing and sales space right now too, because life as a whole is marketing and sales, right? So everything that you do every single day is marketing and sales. The way you get dressed, the way you present yourself to people, the way you decide to talk to people is all marketing and sales. So if you are going to approach that TikTok, specific TikTok video from a marketing standpoint, then like that's you telling a story about yourself in regards to a thing that you're doing, that people are seeing a transformation from start to end. Marketing firms are hiring storytellers now. They're like fancy, big fancy marketing degrees aren't a thing anymore. They're hiring artists and people who are writers to come in and be like, how can I build a story around my brand that is going to resonate with people who are on TikTok, who are on any other app? Because it's not about just like the pretty shiny thing anymore. It's okay, who are you? What are you selling me? What's the story behind, what's the story behind the curtain?
What can you bring?
Right.
That's part of the reason why Hala wanted to bring up Jinx Monsoon in Chicago.
I love her.
That's part of the reason why that show was so successful.
I'm watching her season on Drag Race right now. And it's so slick.
Oh, it's such a good season. All her seasons on Drag Race.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. But also on a wider scale, too. Chicago's been around for 25 years, and they've been doing that kind of casting for the better part of 20 years. And I, the reason why I even auditioned for the tour was because I saw Pamela Anderson in it.
Oh.
And I was like, you, I want to do this show. And she was fantastic. She was absolutely fantastic. And that's, they've been doing that stunt casting for decades. Works.
My big thing is Wendy Williams. I cannot believe that she was in Chicago.
Wait, she was?
She was? I didn't hear that.
Stop.
She can't sing. She can't sing. She still.
Oh, I know she can't. Oh, I know.
She, how does she not fall forward?
Oh my God.
I'm sorry. That's my immediate reaction. Just like that one TikTok where she fainted on stage.
What was that?
That was really like crazy.
Can that was from her show. The one with the Statue of Liberty.
She was dressed up as Statue of Liberty. And
the whole entire sign was extremely loud.
Yeah, I was stunned when I saw
Wendy
that.
Wendy Williams falls under the character, the category of incredibly terrible person, but also very entertaining to watch.
Yeah, and there's still discourse over her fainting.
Oh my gosh.
I'm sure there is, because that was really
James
scary.
Is researching this right now.
Who is Wendy Williams?
I've not seen this.
Yeah.
Oh, you gotta see it.
You've not seen this?
She,
her eyes just like roll back in her head and she falls down.
She's like talking and then she just stops. Her eyes roll and then she says,
yeah.
It's like,
I remember seeing it live and being like, what in the world just happened?
It's like, it's...
I think I saw
it. For some reason, it's reminding me of the Grape Lady. I feel
like Wendy Williams falling down.
The Grape Lady? Who's the Grape Lady?
Uh-oh.
You don't know the Grape Lady? It's not theater related.
No, that's okay. I do other things other than theater.
Wait, what? No way.
Who's the Grape Lady?
So weird.
Okay, hold on.
A Grape Lady!
Quick, we need to come up with a young reference that they won't understand.
It's an old...
No, it's okay. I was just saying, is the Grape Lady the one that's doing, like, the mashing grapes in a bucket and falls over?
No, okay. I didn't know that that's what that was that. Called. Do you, Trevor?
I don't know that.
Oh, God.
I know the gold ones.
I really feel young.
It happened before you... That's crazy. It happened before you were born.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can tell based on
I think I've seen this. Video. Everyone's seen it. It was on Family Guy parody.
There's a contest to stomp, and how are you measuring who does the best stomping? And whoever stomps the most shoes wins an overnight stay, but it's not the only thing you can do. The measuring cups are down below, right?
Measuring cups are down below.
All right. And you win.
And this one, this is what was on Fox News.
What else do you have going on here?
This was news.
Yeah. A simpler time.
Having wine tours and tasting, vineyard tours, seminars, arts and crafts. It's a lot of fun. A whole day. Stop.
Oh my god.
I feel so bad for laughing. Because that had to hurt, for one.
I think she's actually hurt.
No, I think she is. Yeah, she's hurt.
No, I think she's actually hurt.
Yeah, so I think awkward. She's actually hurt. Yeah, I really do.
Possibly, she just right. fell 3 feet.
That's
if she's worst. Not, just give her an Oscar.
I don't think I've seen that before. At all.
I couldn't find the Wendy Williams fall, but I was going to say the Grape Lady was what
that Wendy Williams falling was more stunning to me than when Will Smith slapped Chris Rock.
Oh no!
I'm going to find this video in 5 seconds, James. Oh look, I found it.
Send the link in the chat and I'll share it. So we can all watch it.
Let me.
Oh my god.
The slap heard around the world. That was,
No, it's
all... I rolled my eyes at that so hard.
All right, we'll share this.
Halloween contest. We do it every year. It's always a lot of fun. Let's get started. Our first caress.
Oh, you can tell.
It's not funny.
The fact
it's
that she just funny. Boom.
It's
not funny.
It's not funny. Yeah. But I just after seeing the first few hundred times I've seen is I've been absolutely completely stunned and silent. This time I'm just like I can't even believe that.
Once you've watched it 100 times,
well, not actually, but I've just seen it a lot. And it's just like shocking, but now it's so shocking that it's unbelievable, and that is what makes it funny.
Oh, poor Wendy!
But that was terrible.
No, I feel so bad for Wendy. She's done a lot of very interesting things.
She's a
but she also has like dementia.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah,
she's also human.
She's a bewildering woman.
Yeah.
She makes choices.
Yeah. She does.
And that's her choice.
Many choices.
That's she does those things. Yeah.
That was a choice.
So does anybody have any other questions for Edward?
Now class.
We've gone.
Okay. I mean, we could keep going on and on about musicals, but I feel like James would just...
Have you ever seen a musical, James?
So I think the only live performance I've seen was Pirates of Penzance in D.C.
Oh, we just did that.
We did?
Which was we did.
That's more of an opera than musical.
Yeah.
So what's that type of song called?
It's kind of an opera. Is it like a
patter song?
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's like a recit patter situation.
Because once again, this is going to sound so American. Family Guy referenced it.
Of course they did. Yes, they did.
They referenced everything.
And, yeah. Also, Lin-Manuel Miranda is obsessed with that show, and I believe he bought the rights to it, and he is currently holding the rights hostage because he wants to do it as the pirate.
Uh-uh.
Which I think could be really brilliant. He lives across the street from me.
Does he really? What's he doing these days?
Yeah, I just saw him. He's good. I saw him walking his little Frenchie the other day into the pharmacy.
That's very nice.
You have to serve. Yeah. You will continue.
And listen, I love me some Lin-Manuel. Tell him. Hit me up, because listen, there are way too many covers on my page.
Marketing.
Hey, I'm just saying, yeah. I just really like his musicals. You know, fun fact, we were talking about the TikTok, the off-Broadway version of Hamilton has just recently blew up, like Hamilton has blew up all over again because everybody's obsessed with the off-Broadway version.
Wow.
Because it's like the part where he's like, pay your taxes, and he changes it. And we were like, we should have left this in, that whole stuff. And I was like, oh, I got to go back and listen to that. Because, oh.
I got to go back and file my taxes.
Darn, you just reminded me.
I know. I'm sitting here. The pile's right over here. I just haven't done it yet.
I have a pile, too, because I had like three different jobs.
Young person speaking here. My taxes are already done.
$300. Well, you don't have to pay.
Yeah.
Enjoy that while it lasts.
I know.
Because that's going
to
go away.
I don't have it there, but I have like refund checks I have to put in.
The government. I don't get
it. Oh, no, Bessie, my refund
check. Because I got a check from my college, so I got to somehow figure out how I have to put that in.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely owing so much money this year.
In your industry, are you a W-2 employee or just a contractor?
Depends on the theater. So I just got off a contract that was like the W-2, but they only took out federal. They didn't take out state, which is annoying.
Weird.
Especially for New York.
Yeah, that's never good. But for the most part, they're all W-2. Mm-hmm. There's only a couple that I've worked for that are 1099.
Does union or non-union?
No, because it depends on the contract that you're under. If it's union, typically it will be W-2. But again, that just if it's like a showcase code or a smaller contract, then like you'll get a 1099 and you won't have you'll have to pay taxes later. But for the most part, what you're making under a showcase code isn't enough for it to really matter anyway. And you'll likely be able to write off enough that just disappears into the ethos.
My favorite thing is knowing all of the different theater-related tax write-offs as like a freelance artist. Like, I know all of the ones.
Yeah.
I love it.
The woman who does my taxes, she's been doing them for me since 2007. Mm-hmm. She is also an Girl actress. Boss. And it's just the best.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, here, Jennifer.
You literally can write off so much. It's ridiculous.
Make your magic.
Like, people don't do that enough.
Yeah.
They undercut themselves. Don't do that.
Yep, leave the money on the table.
I need to start documenting what school supplies I buy. But speaking of Scythe, do you make like any money off of Twitch or TikTok?
Not a significant amount, no. Pretty much, like at this point, I do Twitch and TikTok, and I'm starting to do stuff on YouTube. But at this point, the money I make is like, if I want to buy a game or something, you know, like I have a solid amount. And actually right now, mainly what I've been saving up to like buy myself a big beefy PC when I'm all moved out. So like I have, like in my entire time, I've made like maybe $1,500 from it all. Like, not a lot.
For the past few years.
But, like, I think...
So, it's, like, tip-worthy. It's, like,
but
tips.
I think you can do something with it, though. Like, because I feel like... I think that you just accidentally came into your TikTok following.
I just, I was just posting stuff on TikTok, and it just happened over time.
Yeah, yeah.
God, he looks like a child.
Literally.
James, how old is this human being?
Older than James.
He is 35.
Are James, you're 34. Me?
Not kidding.
Oh my god.
No.
Well, good for him.
I already look older than him.
We started dating when I was in college.
Scythe's
trying to be like, I'm young.
If you follow your skincare routine, you'll look just as young as like how your dad looks.
No, my parents are like 60 and like 56, you know, and they still look like they're in their 40s, you know? So like I've got good genetics and I've got good skincare routine, so I think I achieved that.
My mom looks younger,
Oh, yeah. Don't worry.
I want to look young forever.
Yeah.
Forever. I want to go through my old lady phase where I'm with my husband and we're like, oh, so glad.
I'm already going through my old lady phase.
Right. I was going to say, I'm there.
Like, oh, I'm so glad I'm we there together.
After 30, things start.
That's what my dad said.
Well, here's the thing, too. It's not even just that things start hurting. It's that, like, your metabolism betrays you again.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you hit like, 32, 33, and all of a sudden, like, pizza, cheese, meat, alcohol are just like, you know what? You know what,
screw
bitch?
You.
I'm just going to pack it on, and you're no longer going to be able to enjoy things that you like.
We're not going anywhere.
Once we're in, we are staying in.
This is a nice little place. We're going to set up shop.
Right, set up shop.
Well, I'm half vegan on my dad's side.
Good luck with those clothes you bought.
So I think I'll be good in that department.
I just finally got to accepting my size better
area. So I think it's just going to continuously go downhill from there. And I'm okay with that.
You just got to be positive.
Honey, it's only downhill if you think it's a downhill.
You're right. You're real.
Yeah, it's...
Think of yourself as something that ages.
Everybody has different body types. Like,
Yeah, and I will say, theater-wise, this has been a better conversation lately. It's not a great conversation yet, but we're getting there.
Yeah.
Like, the cast of Bad Cinderella is, like, patting themselves on the back for, like, age, gender, racial, and body diversity within their cast, and as that does exist across the board, it's still not like.
Yeah, it's hard.
I want to see some fat bitch leaping across the stage. Like,
six.
I used to have a crush on this guy who was like built like a football player, but could do ballet, Sly.
And as he should.
And
oh my god, it's so hot.
That is the sole reason why I had a crush on him, because I was like, big boy can ballet, and I'm into it.
I will
it.
Say, six to musical, they yeah, have honestly, very inclusive casting, which is really nice to see.
Yeah, it's also like, I don't want to just see one person who's like, blah, 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 like, oh, the shining star of the moment. I want to see, like, hey, they just there, and they in there, and we all there together, you know?
What I love to see is that different, like, the same role will have different types of people.
Yes, yes.
And seeing that. They don't.
Bringing up six, my friend Haley is one of the queens, but there it's now become, I don't remember which, is she Aragorn? I think she's Aragorn.
Oh, Catherine of Aragorn. Sorry.
Whichever one is in the gold. And my friend Britt was Anna of Cleves in the original cast. Wow. But my point is, the woman who is Jane Seymour is now coined forever to be like the curvy white girl. And I would like to see that change. I would like to see maybe not all of them have to be curvy white girl for that one particular track, because then that becomes like the fat girl track. Or
what is it?
And then
Heather,
and then it's
the green Heather and Heathers. I forget her name. Heather Duke. She's always like, since they have that cast, now it's like Heather Duke always has to be an Asian woman.
Or who is that in Ride the Cyclone? The one girl.
Like, why does that have to be a thing?
Yeah, that's what I mean to say. I don't understand why, like, it's the repetition of something like that of annoying.
And I will use Into the Woods as an example, because I think it's a very universally understood show because it's fairy tales and we understand this. Like, why can't we have a big boy playing one of the princes? Like, why do they have to be these tiny little Twinkie bitches? Like, why does that have to be?
It doesn't nobody point out.
But like, why can't we diversify those people? Mm-hmm. Why does the fat guy always have to be the baker? Mm-hmm. Why?
Yeah. Why can't the baker be some hunk?
Yeah.
Right. Like some muscly dude who's like throwing flour on a pie.
Into the Woods. Like, we had Into the Woods like a year ago, and our bakers are pretty fine, I gotta say. Like, we're all college, though.
They were handsome. Well. They were handsome.
She's thinking back. She's like,
the problem that you run into is you get the.
I forget his name.
Sorry, James, what?
Oh, I was saying the problem that you run into, though, is you get like the conservative Twitter folk mad that Ariel is,
but like, who cares about them?
Who gives a shit?
Don't even get.
I know.
Get me
I hear you, but like
that, because that is another thing.
I remember when Maleficent came out, and all I had to hear from my parents was like, "Why did they have to make her look like a good person? Like, why are they trying to?" And I'm like, "Cause it's a good music. Like, it's awesome
because it shows that people are real, like that there's more that
it shows you a different side.
Characters aren't one dimensional. That's more realistic to children than making them think
literally
one than another.
Yeah,
yeah.
So it's like, I just want people to be more open minded. Yeah. I want more open mindedness in these.
And I will say, not like to bring up Sweeney Todd again, with Anna Lee Ashford and Josh Groban playing the roles. What they've done with those two roles is something that I've never seen done before, which is so fascinating. Because I think when you see Sweeney, like, he's typically just like, I'm going to murder people. Or, I don't know why he's a pirate. But he's, he's like an angry murderer the whole time.
Yeah.
And think of when you are angry, like, you are not angry 24/7. Mm-hmm. Like, you have ups and downs and peaks and valleys and things that trigger it and things that don't. And so for Josh Groban, what he's done is you remember by watching him that, like, he was a business owner and a part of the community and was a father and a husband before who loved and had dreams and aspirations of what he wanted his life to be. And then things went sideways and he went off to like Australian prison world and came back thinking that all of that was going to be there. And it was, he didn't know it was different. And so he, as this loving father and husband, come back and his world is gutted. And so now his driving force is like grief and vengeance just to get that life back. Which is why at the end, when he realizes the beggar woman, it's so sad. But then Annalee Ashford, same kind of thing. Like, usually Mrs. Lovett is like a yuck, yuck role. Where it's like, yuck, yuck, yuck. And in this production, Annalee Ashford, who's a brilliant actress anyway, is playing this role like a woman who is like down and out and just trying to get through the day. And she uses humor as these little bright flecks throughout her day and her personality. Not everything is just like slapstick. It's very much like, okay.
And that's like, something else I liked about the movie too.
Oh yeah. Movie. So
yeah. Helena, you definitely, I didn't think like you could see that sad side.
Yeah.
Also like how she sang it and just also cause they had more cinematography available to it. It's like they were able to do more in the sense of showing you background and kind of stuff like that. So obviously you get a little bit more character development, I feel like, in movies than you could in.
Of course. Yeah. Cause then the camera doesn't lie. It's right in your face. Whereas like you're in a big 2000 seat theater, but also Gayton, who's playing Tobias in, I don't remember his last name. He's the kid from Stranger Things.
Yes. Gayton. Yeah. The kid from Stranger Things. I love that kid. He's great.
Oh my God, he's so nice. I got to meet him afterwards at the party and met his family. Oh. He's so nice. He hugged everyone. I was like, you're just such a gem.
Oh, I know.
But his performance too, like his performance too is just, God damn, like he's really solid on stage and on screen. So good for him. Yeah, I saw him.
Oh, yeah?
And didn't realize it. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Sweeney's, it's a good production. I very biasly want to ask you guys a question, because this is a conversation that has been going on in the industry for a really long time. And I'm raging for this because I think it's so necessary, and I can give a million examples of how I feel, but I think theater appreciative people and those who are aspiring to be in the industry, we saw this happen with Hamilton and with Diana. And if you subscribe to Broadway HD, there are things that you can watch there. But if a Broadway show was to stream a performance or was to like put a performance online, would you be interested in watching that? And if so, how much would you be willing to pay?
Oh, that's a great question.
I guess it depends on like if it does something like Amazon, like with BritBox, where it's like an add-on subscription. Or are you doing like show to show?
I don't even think I'm talking about a subscription. So the example in my head is, I'll use Wicked because everyone for the most part knows it. So there've been a bazillion Elphabas. There's been a bazillion Galindas. But if you're a fan of the show and you're following the show and you know that this new Elphaba is coming in and they're going to stream her first night and you like know this person or you're curious to see what it's going to be like and how it's different from the previous Elphabas, like, would you be willing at 8 p.m. Eastern to like sit down in your living room and pay $30-$40 to watch Wicked at home, like a live performance happening?
I think yes.
I think there's probably a market. I definitely do.
Yeah. My only thing, it'd have to be like a consistent sort of thing. So like, you know, like the big thing about streaming is that it's on demand. Right. So I think if you were able to figure out that aspect nicely, then I think that would be a very viable option.
Because the other part of this too is like with timing wise and on demand, the need for that. If it was just shot like with one camera, like to the stage where you got to see the theater experience as if though you were in the audience, would that be more interesting if it was pre-recorded and then there'd be different versions of it that were pre-recorded that then during a particular window of time, you could log online, pay whatever and watch that version of the show. So pay $20 to see Josh Groban and Sweeney Todd now, but then when he leaves and like maybe Hugh Jackman comes in, pay $20 to see Hugh Jackman pay the role. Like to me that sounds great, but I'm biased. I live here. I know people working. So
how much is a ticket like when you go in?
A lot of money.
At least $100 at least.
It depends on what you're doing, on what you're seeing. So like, notoriously, there was a lot of conversation around The Music Man with Hugh Jackman because tickets were like $500+. And they started doing standing room tickets, which are traditionally like $20-$30 for $76. And it was like, get out of here. So you have that end of the spectrum. You have Hamilton premium tickets, which are several hundred dollars. But then you also have a show like Shucked that is purposefully trying to keep the average ticket price thereabouts $80. So I think that's super reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you also have to then, from a producer standpoint, take into consideration the cost of the theater, the cost of the actors, there's overages, there's COVID stuff you have to take into consideration for all kinds of things. Actors get riders where they get to have an Uber home every night, or something happens where that adds onto the budget. And so then you have to consider, like, with all of that in mind, if our tickets are lower, it's going to take longer for our investors to make the money back. And they're not going to like that, because the average Broadway show really only runs for like 1 to 2 years at most nowadays.
Yeah.
There are exceptions. Mm-hmm. Hadestown being one of them. Six just recouped, which is great, but that's also a six person, not much to it, like one costume for per person. So, you know, but then you have a larger show like Sweeney Todd. Josh Groban's getting $150,000 a week plus a percentage of the door.
Lord.
So, that's something else to consider. Yeah. So it really depends on the show that you're seeing.
Fun fact, though, stage managers typically get paid as much as the highest paid actor. So whoever is doing, it's Fiddler on the Roof with Hugh Jackman, right? Whoever's in Sutton Foster, whoever's stage managing that show is getting a pretty penny. So that's another, there's also, besides all the actors and stuff, there's also all the crew and all of that.
Well, I think you're confusing things. So that's true to a point.
Yeah. That's
true. Hugh Jackman's contract and Sutton Foster's contract would fall under like star contracts, which is separate. So I was approached to produce How to Succeed with Daniel Radcliffe, and I did it, and it was a mess, and I ended up not. But I got to see their budget breakdown, and Daniel Radcliffe was making $50,000 a week. John Larroquette, who was under him, was getting $40,000 a week, and then the next person under them, which was like whatever the next role was, getting $5,400. So there's this huge gap, but they were on star contracts, which is a separate thing. And that's negotiated differently than anything else and whatever. So the stage manager thing is probably, and I don't know because I'm not a stage manager. If that is a metric that they're going by, it is the highest paid non-star principal actor.
Well, that's probably true. Fact check only me. Because even though I haven't done any Broadway shows, but
anybody $150,000 a week.
But the stage management network is small, and what I'll say, usually even unless it's like a really like big show, you're probably alternating, alternating. Like there's like the assistant stage manager, then eventually you'll be first for a while, and then you'll switch. So now you're the head stage manager. And so it's like usually the contracts will go in like group of two or three, but unless, you know, like a bigger show like Music Man or something like that. So because there's like alternating, I don't know if that's as consistent. Like I think it's just like standard probably with like non-principal. Like you were saying.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what the cross line is there. But star contracts are definitely different.
Yeah. Good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, because their name is tied to fame. Yeah.
They're selling tickets. Like Ricky Martin, when he did Evita, he was getting, I think, 100 a week plus 4% of the door. Mm. But I couldn't step into that role and be like, I would also.
Right. Exactly. The
They'd be like, no, bitch, you're getting minimum. Have a good day.
That would be nice.
I'd do 1 week of the show and I'd go on vacation for a year.
I certainly think, going back to your question, I certainly think there's a market for that. I don't know what the price point would have to be for like the average person to want to do that. Yeah. I imagine something close to what you'd pay for like pay-per-view
fights. Yeah, that's what I would say.
Like $12 to $20.
Yeah, that's what I would think people also, would do.
Somewhere around there.
Also, what I want to see more of is like the Hamilton kind of.
Yeah, because that's what I was going to say. I was going to say people really, I think people would really enjoy that because I think they wanted to see the show. I think they want the up close and personal experience because I think they want
the
movie. Like they want that personal feel, but they also still want the experience. Like, oh, I'm seeing a show.
I think there's definitely a market for both.
Obviously there is for the pro shot because Diana and Hamilton both did it. And like that deal with Disney, I think was like $75 million or something, but like it's just the pushback to that. And this is not true, and it has been studied, and there's been proof otherwise that says that this isn't true. But the fear within the industry is by doing a pro shot for everything, that'll cut tickets
right, and that people won't actually come to shows. Yeah,
and people won't. But it's like if you buy Taylor Swift's album, are you not going to go see her in concert? No,
that girl's still at Owl Stadiums to the max. Like there's still not enough.
But it's also agreed. But it's the same mindset, too, where it's, if I see this at home, am I then not going to go see it if it comes through on tour or if it's available to see live? No, I'll be more excited to see it because I know it's good. I'm willing to spend the money. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, it's right here. I can just walk out my front door and go.
I think it would.
And it's a different experience than watching it on TV.
I think it would actually make it more accessible. Because the way that I think about it, me as a theater person, I've been in theater my whole life. Oh, I'm going to buy me a ticket. And those are the people who are still buying tickets right now. Versus good old so down the street who went to Sycamore High School, who's not really, doesn't know that much about theater. They're probably going to sit down with their family and buy that $15 to $20 thing to see it or for a musical. Yeah. And that makes it more open. I feel like that will open the door for people to actually want to see more, if anything. Because I feel like the people who want to do it will still do that. I don't know.
Yeah, and it goes back to the TikTok of it all that we were talking about, too. It's like the accessibility and the democratizing of accessibility of theater to the masses. Whereas whatever it looks like, if we can get it to you from a consumer point, like, happy to. And then also, how much money can we make doing that? And there's also this mentality within the industry too. Broadway, maybe not so much, but regions definitely less so now than before, where a lot of these artistic directors are afraid and don't trust their audience. Mm-hmm. So that's where they aren't, you're not seeing diversity across the board because they're afraid that it's not going to sell.
I mean, they could always.
It's not true, but that's what they're afraid of.
What if they just release it to the short places?
As somebody who lives in a different state, literally, if a Broadway show comes out that has a famous actor or something, I'm not necessarily buying a plane ticket and then a hotel and then a $500 ticket to see the show.
Yeah.
If there's an opportunity to see somebody in a show that I know, I might spend the $20 to do it.
Yeah. So the Metropolitan Opera just did this opera called The Hours. My friend Brandon was in it. It's based on the film. And the first, I think it was the first or second weekend that they were open, they put the opera in movie theaters just for Friday, Saturday, Sunday for 2 weeks in a row. Their first weekend, they nearly made $1 million in 3 days. And that's opera. No one watches opera. Mm-hmm. So what do you think you could do with a medium like musical theater if you were putting that into people's homes and getting them to pay $10, $15, $20 a performance?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why would you not? Because same James, I've seen so many productions across this country and others that I was like, should I buy a plane ticket, a hotel, and feed myself for however many days to be? Like, there was a production of Little Shop in London a couple years ago that I was like, am I getting on a plane to go see this? But if it was available to watch online for $25, $30, $40, I would have been like, yeah, I'm going to sit at home and watch this tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then, like, we have a dog, so we're not
You can't, because then you have to board.
It's just...
Yeah, so it's a whole thing.
To me, it's a no-brainer. I think you pick up a much larger audience than you would get in just New York proper or whatever town the performance is at.
Because that's the issue with theater, and that's why the of theater sucks, is because it costs so much to put up. Yeah. But then once it's up, you have a small window of time to make a profit. And so having that entity being able to reach younger people in other states, other people across, and like age non-specific that want to see theater in that capacity.
Yeah. And I feel like people don't see
if you can make an extra $1 million a week, why what does that hurt, you know?
I would love to see more like professional plays.
Yeah. And people don't even watch TV anymore, and they'll turn on their TV to watch John Legend and Jesus Christ Superstar live. So it's
which was epic.
Exactly. So it's like
so
it can be done. It can be done.
It can be done. Yeah, and there's also a whole lot of ho-humming around the contracts we'd have to go through again and equity, and it's been done before. Mm-hmm. Figure it out. Mm-hmm. There's a blueprint. Go read it. Mm-hmm. Mimic that.
Yep.
It's it's a frustrating business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry.
The good news is that could be figured out by the next generation that's coming into the leadership in theater.
Yeah, totally. But also, like, you guys get involved with like union governance. Get your finger on the pulse. Learn it now, so that you're not learning it as you go. Mm. Know it going into it.
Mm. Anyway, so I'm going to cut us off there. I would love to have you back at some point.
I would love to come back. Thank you.
When your screenplay goes live, we'd love to help you promote that. Ooh. We're a small audience.
I will take all the help I can get.
But it's been a great conversation. Everybody, make sure you go check out Cancer Musical Theater and Other Chronic Illnesses by Edward Miske. It's on barnesandnoble.com, amazon.com. You can find it
Apple
anywhere
Books
that you would find.
I bought it.
The audiobook is coming.
Oh, I got it.
The audiobook is coming.
Narrating.
But sure. If you can't wait for the audiobook, you can still get it in ebook format and have Alexa read it to you. It's a little silly, but it works.
Oh my God. LOL, so hard to hear Alexa read my book.
It's, you know what?
Challenge. It's obvious.
There are some parts that are a little funny, a little cringe, because she'll pronounce certain words wrong.
Oh no.
And you know what she means.
Oh God.
But so like curious. I said, I had to cheat because I absolutely wanted to read the book, at least hear the book in its entirety before we had our conversation.
I cannot tell you how appreciative I am that you did.
And I'm glad that I did because I thought it was a phenomenal book. And I normally don't read nonfiction, but this is a nonfiction book that I would read again.
Thank you.
But yeah, check out Edward. We'll share his link in the description of the podcast and on YouTube and everywhere else that this goes live. And make sure to check out his website, check out his book, and keep an eye out for the screenplay. Hopefully, I don't know, what is that going to be on streaming platforms? Or
God willing. We don't have time to describe that process, but hopefully someday okay. It will be.
The next time you come back on the show, maybe we can go a little bit more in depth on that.
I would love.
Anyway, come to our next recording. If you're listening, you can join in on the conversation just like everybody here. We have a chat going on while we record our podcast episodes. You can join the community, suggest topics for each podcast, discord.gg/LGBTfam. We'll get you into the community where you can submit topic ideas. And until next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Au revoir.